Okay. Ponce and Phil, why don't you come up to the table and get ready? Patricia, you got the thing on? Thank you. Okay, let's bring it back to order and keep going.
Good morning, Chair Burnett, members of the Forest Practices Board. My name is Hans Burge. I'm the Adaptive Management Program Administrator.
My name is Phil Roney. I'm a principal scientist with Kramer for Sciences.
And we're here to provide an update on the PHB study design and the pilot project.
So do we have a copy of this?
We do. It's in the folder.
Okay, so I'll start with a brief overview of the PHB validation study, just to make sure we're all on the same page and up to speed. It was requested by the Forest Practices Board in August 2017. The purpose is to validate PHB criteria selected by the board. That's an active process right now. The approach is to develop a study design informed by the work of the science panel and in discussion with stakeholders as well as the Forest Practices Board. And so the first step is to complete a pilot study to inform the sampling methodology and refine project costs and go through an independent peer review process of the study design itself. We call that our ISPR process. The first set of deliverables, is a presentation of the final study design and the results of the pilot study, and that will be given to the Forest Practices Board at your November 2018 meeting. And I expect that the budget will also be updated to reflect what we've learned in the pilot study at that time. The implementation part of this, the study will be completed across 3 years. The intent there is to capture interannual variability and over 3 protocol sampling seasons. Obviously, the protocol sampling season of March through July is the primary focus, but we're also going to be sampling in other seasons to try to capture intra-annual variability to inform PHBs that are used in FHAM and how well they may apply and work in seasons outside of the current protocol season window. The outcome is going to be a final report to the Forest Practices Board. Expectation there is May 2023, following all of the steps in the adaptive management process outlined in Board Manual 22. So that would include going through the CEMER process, CEMER steps with using a scientific advisory group there, assumption, and then going through full policy, of course, the process that all of this was brought to your attention, of course, and then the final decision will be the Forest Practices Board. So the idea is that it takes some time for ISPR steps that are intermixed there, building consensus at different levels, and then going through what we just talked about with the 180 days, if in fact there were some reasons to make a change with policy, this would accommodate that schedule. Okay, so the status of the study design. The comments were submitted from stakeholders and ISPR. Those comments were incorporated into a revised draft and resubmitted to ISPR. The comment matrix and revised study design has been shared with stakeholders, and the study design will likely be revised following review of ISPR, this current step, or else it will be accepted. These identified items in italics include things that are in the future, but the expectation is that ISPR will approve the study design in September and that there will be a presentation to the Forest Practices Board in November.
So Hans, when the pilot study is completed, how will that intersect in with this, with the study design?
That those, the elements that are learned from the pilot study are not so much going to affect the overall design, they're going to provide specific details about the implementation part of that. So in other words, that a modification to a protocol to simplify things at lessons learned, if it takes more or less time per site, that would affect the budget, those kinds of things. And then of course the bigger question is the methods that are intended to capture the PHB criteria in the field, whether or not they work. And so the pilot study is going into some of those things, and we'll talk about some of those in a minute, but just some preliminary information that that's how that would go together. And then of course that would, the results of the pilot would be incorporated into the study design, but the presentation on the results of the pilot as well as the study design will occur in November 2018.
Thank you.
So I'll turn it over to Phil to talk about the steps.
Thanks. I'm just gonna give you a little update on where we're at on the status of the pilot study. We just got under contract to do this in second week, midweek, mid-July. And so we scrambled to get out in the field and identify sites. We've got approximately 15 sites identified for Western Washington, part of those on DNR land, part of those on private land. I was out there with the crew last week and a little bit this week. We've got 6 sites sampled so far. Those are split between the Cascades and Olympics, and we've got 9 more sites we're trying to get done this week and next. And just to kind of give you some background, what we're doing on the pilot study is we're going into each site from an existing water type modification where there's an end of fish point. We're going in at the end of fish point. We're going and surveying the stream, a detailed topographic survey. We call it a longitudinal profile. 200 meters downstream, 200 meters upstream from the end of fish. And we're getting all those things that you need to identify PHPs, bank full width, wetted width, gradient, habitat types, substrate types, including whether there's wood there. Probably something I'm forgetting, but you'll see it in some of the couple of graphs I show. And we're also, you know, there's a lot that goes into actually getting to these sites. So even though in many cases we have permission and keys and everything, the sites are not always easy to find. Or we've had, you know, there's been increasing concerns over fires. So gates that were supposed to be open are suddenly closed. Or sites, the exact coordinates on a site are not very good. So we're seeing all the things that we want to know about that's going to take time on the full study, but we've been able to knock out these 6 sites, and I've got a crew out there working right now. You know, some of the sites, they go quickly. Others, I spent a couple days doing nothing but cutting old growth devil's club for the ability to be able to survey, because these are small streams and we're talking about surveying with an instrument that measures the gradient, the elevation. So you need 2 people with one with a survey rod and one with the actual reflector. So you need a line of sight. So there's some of these go really quick. Some of them are, when I say really quick, they still take more than a half a day. Others have taken, the whole growth devil club site with, in a very steep terrain, took more than 8 hours to survey 400 meters. So we're getting a good feel for how it's gonna go and what we're up against. We're working on site selection in Eastern Washington. My hope is that we'll have the crew switch from the Western Washington sites to the Eastern Washington sites early next week. We're trying to get all this done by the end of August. And again, that's to inform as Hans was saying, to kind of fine tune the study plan and kind of what the budget and what it's going to take to do this. And we'll have the analysis and reporting will be completed for you in October. And then we'll present that at the November board meeting, as Hans said. And maybe you can just, oh, yeah, we'll stop. Any questions before I show a couple of the data slides and where we're at?
Questions for Phil or Hans? Okay.
I have one question. When you go to the end of fish points, are you going to the marked end of fish from the water typing, or are you actually sampling for fish and then finding?
Yeah, so the original plan was to actually do the sampling for fish, but the time frame that we've got, we don't really have the time to go in and do the end of fish survey and get the information we need. And we're not really as concerned about identifying end of fish. We know how, you know, people have been doing protocol electrofishing surveys for a long time. We know what that's going to take. It's the actual methodologies of recording all the information and identifying the PHBs and being able to test the criteria that you've adopted. So right now we're focusing on just doing the topographic, the long profile habitat survey. We plan on actually doing the electrofishing surveys at a handful of sites in September, just so we're absolutely sure we know what it takes to do everything. But we're trying to also focus on sites where the end of fish was identified in the last couple of years, so we know it's pretty accurate. And we're going right, all of these have been flagged that we've been, all of them have had a plaque, so we're going right to the end of fish, measuring 200 meters downstream, measuring 200 meters upstream, and doing the survey.
More members, sweetie.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I snuck in while you were looking away. this is a question about the validation study design. So the alternatives that we put together, approved to go ahead for rulemaking include an anadromous zone, which you guys didn't really talk about in the science report. So is there any aspect of the validation study that sort of helps answer the question about, you know, where is the appropriate end of that anadromous zone, or anything else that's sort of pertinent to that aspect of our proposals?
The PHB validation study is really about those features that would be PHBs. And in the sample population we're drawing from, they would include points that would be within and outside of an anadromous zone, whatever that is. And so I think the PHB pieces that are physically based are going to be very easy. Now, the anadromous zone isn't so much a description of any physical condition. It's more of a boundary.
Right.
And so I don't think that the study design would explicitly, it does not explicitly go into what that boundary should be or shouldn't be. That would be something that would need to be added. Remember that the intent here is to capture whatever those PHBs are. And when we have been putting this through, you know, we're waiting on direction from the board on which criteria we should be looking at to judge whether or not it's appropriate. And so we've tried to come up with a study that could evaluate any of those PHB criteria, physically based PHB criteria, not so much what that boundary would be. And if the board was seeking that, it would result in the team would have to go back and look at what that would mean and how to do that in the most reliable and effective way.
So what I'm hearing you say is that it actually may not, it wasn't the original intent, and may not be appropriate to use this study to answer that question.
I think that's
okay.
True. Yeah.
That's helpful, thank you.
Any other questions for board members? Okay, continue please.
Maybe you can go to the next slide first. So just to give you an idea of the kind of the density of the data, and you know, in giving people, in instructing people how to give presentations, I'm always saying, hey, don't put up a slide and then apologize for the slide. And this is one of those slides that someone would apologize for and say, hey, there's too much data here, just ignore this. But I really wanted to put this up just to impress upon you the number of points. This is a little more than 200 meters below and a little more than 200 meters above an end of fish point, and the kind of data that we're getting. And so you realize that, and this was one of the first sites we did, and we were surveying a point every meter or so. So this took, you know, you can figure a couple minutes per point. You can see how long this took, but basically you see kind of the density of the information that we're getting on this. You know, bankful width, wetted width, the depth, the different habitat types, the substrate types. It's pretty dense information. We've gotten, this was again one of the first sites we did, so it's probably a little more intensive than, or the points are a little more frequent that we're gonna be doing. It's also was a fairly steep site, so that's partially required that. If you can go back one slide there. So, but what we're trying to get out of this, and what you asked about is, you know, where are the PHBs? So this is a longitudinal profile of the stream. This is the, you know, going, this the graph up on the top is going from zero is 200 meters downstream from end of fish, and up towards the top where it says 400, that's 200 meters above the end of fish. End of fish point is that black line. All those little lines you see there are things that met the PHB criteria that you adopted. So there were three different sets of criteria, and in this case there were only points along that met two of the sets of the criteria, and these criteria are a combination of obviously barriers, gradient, channel width. So that gives you, we've actually got it programmed, you know, we're having the crews identify these in the field, but they don't really need to because we've got this set up in an iPad as they enter data. If it meets any of the criteria that have been adopted, it flags it and asks them to, you know, to take some additional notes on it, or possibly a photos and GPS coordinates. We're not collecting GPS coordinates at every single point because it takes a little while for that to register, and it would really, really slow the survey down. So we're getting them at certain places, the beginning, the end of fish, at the end, and any PHBs that the app flags as meeting the criteria that the crew actually agrees is a PHB. And in some cases, you know, one of the things we're working out, for instance, in this case, there was a deformable barrier about every 10 to 20 meters on this particular section of stream, and deformable meaning there was wood, big logs across the stream that had created a 3 or 4 foot drop, but it was logs, and that's considered a deformable barrier, not a permanent barrier. And that's what a lot of these, well, the picture on the left is just showing some of the Devil's Club, and that happens to be a section that there was some open canopy, but that's, you know, the stream's in there under all that stuff, and we're having to kind of clear that out so we can get a shot through there to do the survey. And then these are just some photos of some of the, you know, there's wood and bedrock and some of the steps and what we're looking at as they're doing the survey. Anything you want to add? So I think that those kind of show you, you know, kind of where what we're faced with. I think one of the things, our original proposal was to do 100 meters downstream and 200 meters upstream. And we got comments from folks that saying we should be doing more, we should be doing longer than, we should do 200 meters downstream, 200 meters upstream. There were even some proposals that we should be doing 300 or 400 meters in either direction. But, you know, logistically, that would take days, you know, a couple days or more, or 2 or 3 days to do things like that. And I think we also have to realize that the crews in the full study will be going back to these sites. So if the end of fish moves, or if we realize there are no PHBs that have been identified in the 200 meters upstream from end of fish, the crews can append this by doing some additional, an additional survey upstream. You know, in small streams like this, the channel is not changing very much between from month to month, so you know, they'll only need to resurvey it if there's really been some dramatic changes, and they would obviously resurvey it each year when they're doing this. I think that's kind of where we're at with the pilot study, and I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's been coming up in the field that you might want to know about.
Board Member Nelson?
I had a question. I think it'd be beneficial. I'm not too terribly interested in crawling through old growth devil's club myself. I'm down enough of that. But I think it would be advantageous for us as a board to look at one of these sites if there's one close and if logistically we could get to it. But I think it would be beneficial if we could see some of this on the ground, where the end of Fish Point was, 200 meters down, up, where the PHBs are. It would make a lot more sense than this graph is fine. The last one was a bit confusing to me, but I think it would make a lot more sense on the ground for decision-making purposes. I don't know if that's possible or not, Mr. Chair, but I think it'd be a great idea if we could go look at some of these.
We'll talk about that later in the agenda.
I was just going to say that the sites that the crew's working at right now are on the Bale Tree Farm, and that is not too far from here. And at least a couple of the sites, the access is quite easy. And in fact, there's a whole range going from the good to the bad to the ugly on that tree farm, and at least the ones we've seen so far. But there are a couple that are close to the road and quite easy, and you can see the end of Fish marked, and you can see in one of them a bedrock chute that's clearly the end of it's clearly where the FM break was identified.
Okay. Any other questions for the panel? Thanks, Hans. Appreciate it. Appreciate the update.
Actually, I did have one quick question. This is more logistical. I'm sorry. Dr. Roney, are you going to be around during the afternoon discussion of we're talking about some clarifications on the proposal? Or are you going to be in the room, or were you planning on leaving?
If you want me to stay, I can leave.
Okay. I think it would be helpful. I think there might be some questions coming up on tributaries.
Okay.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Hans, you ready for the SEMA budget discussion? So just to be clear, the board's going to be asked, Hans is going to review with us some hard work that DFW policy put into a proposed budget for next biennium. And I'm emphasizing it's a proposed budget for next biennium because the idea is for us to approve something today that then DNR will put into the budget process for the biennial budget legislative session, and then next spring, depending on how the legislature receives this, we will policy will bring back to us a more finer-tuned budget, assuming we either get what we asked for, or if there are any tweaks, then they'll come back and there'll be a request to approve the actual budget to actually go to implementation. So right now, what the board will be asked to do is to approve a proposed budget for submittal to the governor's office. Okay.
Morning, Chairman Aft, members of the Course Practices Board. My name is Hans Burge. I'm the Adaptive Management Program Administrator, and I am going to speak to you about the proposed budget from TFW policy to be considered by the board. The first point, just to follow up, is it was a challenge from all parties involved, from all caucuses that pitched in for this, to come up with a budget that was balanced. There, as we've talked about, there have been some delays in some of the larger clean water assurance projects. There's also the PHB project, which are all very large sums of money that are directed in some of these important topics. And there are some other priorities that are maybe down the list that are also really important to move forward. And so it was a challenge to to try to figure out where there could be some efficiencies in timing to sync up some results of other studies that would feed into the subsequent work, and then also to really hone in on what those budgets were and identify if there were places where there could be some savings. And so it really was an all hands on deck sort of situation with TFW policy. In fact, we formed a policy subcommittee on the budget in the last biennium in preparation of the biennial budget that was effective, and we had some lessons learned from that exercise. And we reconstituted that group this spring to really spend the time in going through the budget with with a lot of scrutiny and discussion in between policy meetings to try to get to where we needed to be today, which is a proposal for the 1921 biennial budget. So in fiscal years 2020 and 2021, on the handout, those are the ones that are in green. That is really the subject of what I want to talk about today. That's the budget that is being requested for the next biennium. And I want to draw your attention to a couple of places. In my memo to you all, I talk about all of those categories and how things fall out. In the administrative and program staff side of things, there was an addition that TFW policy wanted to make. Given the caveat that this budget was very difficult, it doesn't have room to add projects. There just isn't space or there isn't money to accommodate that. But if there were savings from any of these projects moving forward, policy really wanted to plan for the future. And so they added an item, which is on row 15 in the spreadsheet, with a brown fill color there that says project development fund. And you'll notice that it's zeroed out in the next biennium. We don't have the money to put anything in there. But if money were to become available, we think it's really important that that would be a place to identify development for future projects. In addition, we still maintain the CMER contingency fund item, which is row 14 right above that, which is also identified as zero because we couldn't afford it. But that's really for CMER projects that may have unintended consequences. There could be delays, there could be cost overruns. We want to plan for that in the future. And so although we can't afford it from what we think from this budget, this biennium, in the future, we still want to make sure that we make some progress there and we put the money back in there. And so this idea that although it shows zeros, you'll see some other zeros here, the implication is there is work going on in this biennium on those items. There isn't money set aside for it, but through stakeholders working together on those topics and some stakeholders taking the lead, it's being funded outside of the adaptive management program research specific dollars. They're going to be working on it outside of that. And so that's really what those zeros are. So that's an important one. There has been some discussion about extended monitoring, for example. That was one that was a difficult one to come to grips with in terms of trade-offs with that budget item. But policy did come to consensus on that. And there was discussion around the pros and cons. And for the next biennium, that was in consensus to have extended monitoring there. And that's on row 38. Are there any questions on the above the blue line items of the budget? I have one other.
Can you speak? Can you say that again about the zero? There's a zeroed out item that is being worked on by outside of the CMER budget.
Right. So, for example, if you look at row, we talked about the contingency funds and otherwise there. There may be opportunities to put numbers there through the biennium or even through this process in the fall and the spring when we're refining the budget. There may be some dollars that go in those places, but we don't have them identified now. But if you look at row 31, you'll see an RSAG, riparian characteristics, and shade study. And if you go over to the green, you'll see zeros. The project proponent and RSAG are going to be working on that project, developing a study design for that project. They don't have any dedicated funds to do that. We can't go out to a contractor to bring in, or you know, a certain skill set or a twig or anything like that. We don't have any funding for that. Our SAG is going to pick that up and going to make progress on that. That's just one example.
Got it.
There's some other places where that happens on Sage as well, on Row 34. Not seeking money, but they're going to be doing the work. And we thought that was important to highlight, because those will turn into projects. And so we're not languishing on moving those projects forward. We're just taking advantage of commitments from people to do the initial phases of that before we need the money, because we do need to keep them going.
Thanks for that clarification.
Other board members have questions about this part of the budget? Board Member Davies.
Thank you. I'm wondering where the 2 years and the $255,000 seems like a lot of money and a lot of time. And I'm just wondering, I understand that you said that this was a consensus, you came to consensus on this, but did it come from this additional study, did that come from CMER? Or where did it come from? How did you get there? Wondering, that's a lot of money.
I'm
listening to
Mark earlier. Right. So, thank you for that question.
You talking about line 38?
Sorry.
Yeah. Extended monitoring. Policy did have that very discussion within the budget subcommittee, and also full policy talking about the pros and cons. This is for type N extended monitoring of the soft rock project. And so the hard rock study is at policy, is being considered. One thing that is being finished up in the current biennium, which is not on this budget, is there was also some extended monitoring of this same type of data for the hard rock study.
Okay.
And that's being analyzed right now. So there was really 6 years of post-harvest monitoring for that. And the soft rock study hasn't come to CMER yet. It's going to come to CMER in the fall. And so this is, I don't want to say this is a placeholder, because it's absolutely not a placeholder. It's an expectation. But that was really where the discussion was, is, okay, so is the timing of recovery, would we see some changes if we looked at an additional 2 year time step for the study? That was the justification here. And because we don't know, we haven't seen the results from, when I say we, I really mean policy, hasn't seen the results, or CMER for that matter, hasn't seen the results of the soft rock study yet. This was in anticipation that the same logic that was used and applied to the hard rock study for extended monitoring would follow a similar path and be applied to the soft rock extended monitoring. Now remember, the primary difference between soft rock and hard rock is really the lithologies. So in basalt versus incompetent lithologies, there's a question of whether or not they would be different, if you'd see a different temperature or flow response. And so it's an unanswered question, but really this is in anticipation that decision would happen. Now, that being said, I know that there's going to be more discussion about this before we get to next May, when you really approve the, or even in August, the final. But this is what policy came up with as a placeholder between then and now.
Okay, so you're saying that it's a placeholder, and you're going to consider the results of this that come in to CMER this fall, and maybe reconsider, see if you really need this.
I would look at it as not a placeholder from your perspective, as this would be approval for that money to be spent. Except it won't, it, actually approval for the money to be asked for to spend on this. But between then and now, the soft rock study will come to CMER. There will be a discussion about the results. There, I'm certain there will be discussions about continued monitoring at CMER, likely at policy as well, before the budget comes back to you, before anyone would spend even a dime of this money. I guarantee there will be discussions, because they've already taken place and there wasn't a way to resolve them. So I think with more information, I think the likelihood that there will be a discussion and a way to resolve them is certainly much greater.
Okay. Other board members have questions for Hobbs? on this part of the budget.
Okay. And then I wanted to hit one last thing. Take this out. And that is this idea on your back, on the back page, you'll see there's a purple stripe. And these projects are referred to as below the line. They are projects that you'll see here that have been above the line in years past. There's even a couple of Clean Water Act assurances in Mark's report. In the table, he highlighted in red where those projects stand and why there's some discussion about those. There's some extended monitoring up above here, too. There's the Van Dyke Salamander project. There's some status and trends monitoring based on some other results that CMR is now looking at. So the idea is if we have a below the line place to identify those projects that might be candidates for that project development fund category, for example, that there would be a process set in place to make that happen. We're not seeking any money for any of these things right now. They're not, we're not asking for money for the next biennium, but it's just a concept that policy really liked having the second tier to draw from in case there was funding available. And the idea is that, of course, those projects on this list would either be directed by the board or they would be in the CMR work plan and proposed and work their way from CMR out to policy or vice versa. There would be a CMR policy interactive step to get the projects here. And then when policy approved to add them there, of course, before any money got spent on those or initiated those projects, of course, there'd be communication with the board on that.
It would be a fair characterization, Hans. I know in years past when the budget's been tighter, that we actually had two columns some years. We had a first tier column where we could move forward based on the money we had in hand. And then if something changed, we had a second tier set of projects. Is this similar to that?
I think it is very similar to that. These are projects that have been above the line on previous master project schedules that you've approved and seen. It really had to do with the prioritization step that policy went through to try to figure out where the money was best spent. And so some of these projects, although they make a lot of sense, they may be important to some of the caucuses. Again, this was in consensus that they stay in this category, this essentially a parallel to what you're talking about here, tier two. And so that was really the intent of that piece. So yeah, I think it is very similar to that.
Questions from board members? So thank you, Hans. Patricia, do we have public comment on the CMR master project schedule? Alec Brown, please.
Two things. One, to introduce myself, so thanks to the board and Chair Bernath for allowing me. I'm Alec Brown. I'm the Conservation Caucus rep. I'm fairly new, been around a little bit, but I haven't had the chance to speak to you, so I appreciate the opportunity. And then I just wanted to share the Conservation Caucus views on the CMR master project schedule. You may have noticed that we voted sideways. It's not because we had any major issues with what's on there to be funded. We just thought that we wanted to express, I guess, our dissatisfaction with the current way the AMP chooses to fund these unnecessary extended monitoring projects, especially when these projects are already done, or at least, you know, they're done as they were originally scoped. I guess we believe that, you know, the extended monitoring is not always an efficient nor effective use of the limited AMP funds or staff time. I think that the previous example is a good one. You have $205,000 over 2 years. is a lot of money, and does it make sense to keep going with the study just to see if it matches another study when you might have results already and it might be time to move? That is our view. That said, you know, we appreciated the way this budget came together. As Hans shared, a lot of the extended monitoring projects were quickly moved below the line, and I enjoyed working with people on the subcommittee. You know, and we understand that there are cases in which we would want to approve extended monitoring of projects. So we're not reflexively opposed to that. We would just like a more formalized process in the way we approve or disapprove extended monitoring. So I'll conclude quickly by saying that, you know, we've been encouraged that there was a commitment from all the other members of TFW to kind of formalize this and figure out a way to work on this moving forward and kind of make sense of which extended monitoring projects you do fund and which you don't. And you know, the Conservation Caucus looks forward to engaging in that process. So thanks.
Thank you, Al. Ray Hens.
Chairman Nath, members of the board, Ray Hens with the Kalispell Tribe. Appreciate the time to come up and talk to you a little bit about budget. Probably more than 3 minutes worth, but there was a lot of effort going into balancing this year's budget, and some credit needs to be given to policy for going through that process. This is getting tougher and tougher every year for policy to go through these budget processes and balance a budget. And part of that reason is that the board gives us some priorities too that are unplanned and unbudgeted. And so those have major effects on current and out year portions of the budget. But what I want to talk about mostly is sort of in concert with the Conservation Caucus, this need to continue studies. When the studies come through CMER, they come through a pretty rigorous process to develop a study design and approve it for a period of time to test effectiveness of a rule. And so we believe that those studies have a lot of support. They get through the process, they go through policy, they come here, they get approved, we get them funded. The add-ons don't necessarily go through any process, necessarily. CMER may vote to say, yeah, we want some extended information on this or not. It's pretty fuzzy. And it goes outside the scope of which those projects were initially reviewed and by ISPR and approved by CMER. That to me is somewhat problematic in that it sets this precedent for continuing to stretch our budget issues out into the future. And so this bow wave effect starts to have a deleterious effect on being able to fund priorities, whether they be board priorities or policy priorities or emerging priorities like forest health and fire, which we have no room to deal with right now within the budget. And if you look at the out years, we're $5 million in the hole starting until 2024. And that's strictly because the B&O tax falls off at that point, which basically funds the FFSA account, which I think there'll be a large support to renew that. But in you take that, put it back, we're still $1.5 million in the hole. So there is no room to do these things. And our feeling from the side is that once these projects are scoped and approved and reviewed for what they're intended to do, they're done. Once they're done, they're done. And we want to see the program move forward with effectiveness on other rules as agreed to in FFR and MHCP. We do agree that having more information is great, and collecting more information as a scientist is fantastic to have more and more information to make decisions on. But we don't feel that it's the responsibility of the AMP to fund that. So if we want to continue with an add-on or extended monitoring, we feel that there should be a separate place for that to occur. So if there's space within DNR to ask for extended monitoring programs or add-on programs to collect more information, we think that's appropriate, but we don't think that it should be burdening the AMP. So I guess we've already established I'm insane, but I'll end there. So, thank you.
Thank you, Ray.
Karen Pulger.
Good morning, Chairman Bernath and members of the Forest Practices Board. For the record, my name is Karen Terwilliger. I'm a senior forester at the Washington Forest Protection Association, and thank you for the opportunity to chat with you a little bit about budget today. I think Hans, Ray, and Alec all preface the fact that policy has spent a huge amount of time on budget this year. We also spent a lot of time within our caucuses of talking to the technical people that work on CMER so that we had a good understanding of what the projects were and what the different phases of the projects are. We've probably spent 20 to 30 hours just going through a prioritization process. And I don't know that each member of policy did it, but I know I did it 3 times, and I think Mark Hicks did it 4 times. So we've spent a lot of time looking at what the projects are, looking at the impacts of the project for every single one of these line items, and also looking at the different phases of the projects. One thing I wanted to mention about these below the line projects that Hans referenced is that that is also the place where new projects can come on to the schedule. And it gives either the, well, I guess it would be CMER, but the scientific advisory groups some arena to begin to pull those up through the process, which I think is something that we've missed in the past. We also want to take a look at those projects that are below the line to see if they should even stay on the schedule so that there'll be a process of prioritization, review to see if the project is what we need at this time, and then whether or not it actually stays on the schedule itself. In addition to that, what we're planning to do over the next few months is to prioritize the phases of those projects that are below the line. When Hans talked a little bit about sometimes we have unexpected vacancy rates or unexpected non-spending in the program, there's an opportunity then to take a prioritized project or phase and move it into the process. So we're trying to be a lot more rational in managing the process as we go forward. So I know that's kind of nerdy, but you wouldn't be surprised to know that I was on the subcommittee. I think that the projects that were funded in this budget are a really good set of projects that are representative of the needs that we have for the adaptive management program. There are a lot of projects dealing with water quality and water quality milestones in particular. There are staffing changes that we made, including putting a CMER scientist primarily on the east side so that they could begin to develop some of these strategies dealing with forest health and fire, which we don't currently have in the CMER work plan in a significant way. So these emerging issues, we're looking at emerging issues, not just the projects that we have on the list. It probably also won't surprise you that WFPA is very strongly in support of the extended monitoring project that is on line 38. We believe that looking at recovery through a couple more years of extended monitoring is really important in understanding what the changes in the regulations may need to be. Now, we don't think that this extended monitoring needs to stop or delay the current discussions that we're having in terms of water quality and the look at the buffering systems, but we think that information is really important in the process. So we ask that you adopt those recommendations in whole. One other thing that I think both Alec and Ray spoke to in terms of the extended monitoring process is that we do need to have some specific criteria to be able to understand when extended monitoring might be appropriate. And I think that criteria would be helpful both in the project development phase, where you've got CMER trying to determine how much time they think they need to monitor projects, as well as at the end of those projects to see if we need to extend that time frame. So thank you. I appreciate your support and your attention. And if you have questions, please ask.
Thank you very much, Karen. Okay, that's our public comment on the CMER master project schedule. Hans, you wanna come back up? Board discussion. Are there any lingering questions from board members to staff? Board Member Davis.
Thank you. So I'm a little confused now. So that line 38 example that we just talked about, Alec and Ray and Karen all mentioned, did that come from CMR?
No.
No. It has not come from CMR. I think everything that all three of them said, I don't think any of those things are conflict in any way with what the other people said, and it's all true. It has not come through CMR because the soft rock study has not been presented to CMR. So there's absolutely no way that it could have come through CMR. This is really the anticipation that when that study comes through, that there may be value in continuing to collect the data. Again, it's very much analogous to what was done for hard rock. Now, this idea about is it appropriate to extend, you know, do extended monitoring? Well, we don't really know. In this case, if there is a compelling reason to do it, right? So it is very much a placeholder. And like I said, there's more discussion that needs to happen. And all of the points that everyone brought up today, none of those are new. Those have all been discussed, and they're true. They're all true. But it wasn't a very easy place to resolve, because if we do go through the hard rock study and we find out that we need to add extended monitoring, we're not going to be able to pay for it. If we go through the soft rock study and we find that we don't need extended monitoring, then we'll have something below the line that we're going to want to look at the next phase to fund.
Okay,
so
that's really helpful. It's just, you know, we're hearing this is all very expensive and there's a timeline, and it's not clear how that would affect the report, like would it be delayed?
No, the report, we have a contractual agreement with the Department of Ecology, the PI on soft rock, and that will be delivered to CMR this fall. It's going to be reviewed by CMR, it's going to go to ISPR, and we're fully anticipating that the entire soft rock project for that, which has been approved by ISPR and planned all along, will be done in the current biennium.
Okay.
That's in the works for that to happen. We're on a schedule to make that happen. And so this would be in the next biennium.
So I think the process question is a good one, like how these come up. I feel like that's something that, and maybe the new chairs who said they're going to do some house cleaning and that sort of thing can come up with a process for this. Because it's a lot of money.
It is. I think there is a CMR step here that also you alluded to that. That I do think that this should come from CMR from a technical perspective. And like we've heard in the past, if you ask a scientist if it would be valuable to collect more data, the answer is always yes.
Yeah.
Because there's more certainty with more data and sure. What the results are. But again, I think this really should go to CMR. There should be discussion about it, and then there should be a recommendation to policy if it is important to include it, that it comes through those steps. We just haven't had a chance for those because of the timing.
Okay. Thank you.
So can we anticipate, everybody spoke to needing specific criteria on which to make decisions on extended monitoring, meaning monitoring more years than the study plan originally called for. Can we anticipate that discussion happening before May?
You can direct that discussion to happen before May. I know that the discussion is going to happen whether or not criteria are developed.
Okay.
We don't know. It's premature to state that. But I think that you could ask for that and ask policy. Well, I would ask CMR first. To come up with some technical rationale behind extended monitoring. It would be helpful in the study design phase that goes to ISPR. The comment that Ray made about, you know, these are studies that have been through ISPR and peer-reviewed study designs, and they were determined to pass that standard without extended monitoring. So if something changed, I think it would be wise to have that step, that process step. There's certainly nothing that would prohibit that from happening.
Okay. Board Member Nelson.
Yeah, I just had a comment. I see that one of my favorite legislators is in the back of the room, and so I wanted to echo something that Rayanne said, which is we're going to rely on the B&O tax surcharge to pay for a lot of this stuff. It's currently scheduled to go off the cliff in 2024. So just for the record, we need to be supportive of getting that money and fund some of these projects through either a reauthorization of that or some other funding source. Brian?
Welcome, Representative Blake. Okay, any other questions for Hans before I entertain a motion? Okay. Do you have a draft motion, Patricia, the board to consider?
While she's pulling that up, can I just ask a couple quick clarifying questions?
Absolutely. Board Member Janicki.
Just a couple of clarifying questions. Thank you for presenting this. Just the Eastside Scientist, I am very excited that that is still showing up as a budgeted item. It shows a start date of December of 2018, so is that still, those funds are still available for that to happen this year?
Yes, that is absolutely the intent, yes. We're working on some of the details. We've had some preliminary conversations with Sage about the best way to kind of approach that. I apologize for missing that really important line item there, but that is the intent. And the position would be housed on the east side, focused on the east side primarily, but also available to help the program as a whole.
Yeah, I guess after our field trip, whenever that was on that cold and snowy
November.
That cold and snowy day, that really hammered home the need for that, so thank you. And then on line 18, the PHB validation, you just gave us all kinds of information on that. This notation says pilot and first year of sampling, which the pilot will be done by this, by the time fiscal year 20 comes, so that's right. So I just that crossing that out.
Correct.
It's the validation study.
Right.
And final report, actually, that happened in that.
Correct.
The starting those two lines. Okay.
Correct.
Thank you.
Okay.
Would somebody like to offer a motion?
Board Member Kapp.
Read it, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move the Forest Practices Board approve the 2019-2021 Master Project Schedule. Excuse me. The Forest Practices Board also finds that the program is in substantial compliance with the 2017-2019 CMER Master Project Schedule.
Is there a second?
Second.
Thank you, Board Member Gunther. Any discussion by board members? Board Member Swedeen.
So I found the discussion about the extended monitoring item to be interesting and compelling, and especially Mr. Entz's testimony sort of put a fine clarifying point on it. And I have concerns about that line being in there, and you characterized it as an expectation. And to me, the uncertainty around it, it should be more in the bucket of a placeholder and not an expectation. So I'm willing to vote for the budget, but I want to put a stake in the ground that I want to see some significant discussion, including the criteria that you referred to, Chairman Bernath, about whether or not extended monitoring is needed. And just sort of to tack that on after, you know, going through a full study design process, and then I am concerned about the budget implications of that, especially when you don't have those criteria established and CMER hasn't weighed in on whether or not it's necessary. So as I'm talking, I'm wondering actually if we might. If we might be able to either just characterize that line item more as a placeholder rather than an expectation, to give ourselves more room for changing our decision based on the information that we get prior to tonight. And if not, I'm likely to vote as an abstention.
Okay. Other board members? Let me ask Tara and Kurt, can you come up for a minute? So there's been questions about whether a discussion in the next 9 months could be take place regarding criteria on extending projects beyond their study design. Can that happen before May?
Yes. I say it with a little bit of a question mark because I don't want to speak for Kurt, but I think we're probably in agreement with this, that has to happen, I think, with CEMER as well when it comes to this. So I would say, I'm looking back at Doug right now, I think we already have it on our work plan for TFW to talk about this prioritization issues, of which extended monitoring is part of that. But based on the additional things that came up in the discussion here, it sounds like there's more elements that need to be built into that. And I think that's definitely a co-project with CEMER. So we can tackle that.
Yeah, I think that's a fair, I can support that as well. You know, at our last meeting, we indicated a commitment to continue the work of our budget subcommittee, so that's something that we sort of know that we left some loose ends there and plan on working on that. Of course, the folks that are on the budget subcommittee for the most part are the same people that are on the Type N Hard Rock committee and other things, so it's just one of those things that the more things you add to your plate, the less likely you are to accomplish any of them. So there is that, as always. But I think that this was certainly a key focal point of our work, so it's not surprising that it's a focal point for the board members as well. And I think my understanding is the reason some of the extended monitoring items were on the proposal that came to us was just to start the conversation. Obviously, extending an existing project has advantages, especially one that takes so much resources to set up that you know, it's potentially a missed opportunity if you cut that off and you're missing an additional extension. And as folks have said, scientists always want more data. I'm a scientist, I get that. But on the other hand, there was so much pushback against that most of those things dropped below the line because we felt like they weren't supportable. But it sounds like this would be a fair addition to our subcommittee's work in the next 6 months or so.
Doug,
meet your expectations.
Wag your head one way or the other. You okay with this?
Yes.
Good. Thank you. All right. So, I think I don't know if you feel like this has to be part of the motion, but I think we've gotten a commitment from the co-chairs, both Policy and CEMER, to actually, when the budget gets presented in May to us, to also bring back some clarity around when projects are recommended for extension beyond the study design. Is that a fair way to characterize what the commitment is? Board Member Sudeen.
And so that's good and helpful, and I appreciate that. And I would also just like to specifically note that we have a discussion about this particular line item, not the criteria, not just the criteria in general, and that we have an opportunity to change our mind about this. So voting yes now for this proposed budget doesn't sort of lock us into changing it in May based on the results of that discussion.
Sure. I'm good with that. Other board members? Board Member Davies? Were you raising your hand?
Oh,
sorry.
Good.
Okay. All right. Any other discussion about the SEMR master project schedule? Board member Willett?
No.
No? You're good?
I'm good too.
I'm looking for all the, you know, nuanced hand gestures.
It's like an auction.
Yeah, it's almost like an auction.
Sold.
Yeah. All right. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, same sign? Any abstentions? Motion passes. Thank you. So we're an hour ahead. So I think what I'd like to do is Mark, would you like to come up and give your update? And then maybe, because the next item is probably a little longer, we'd break for lunch after your item. That's my suggestion to board members.
Mr. Chair and members of the board, I'm Mark Engel. I'm the Forest Practices Assistant Division Manager for Policy and Services. I'm when the computer cooperates. I'll give you an update on the water typing system rumor. Yeah, I suppose we could work off of the handouts which the board had received. Computer chose a good time to do updates.
So I use that too. I use that system.
Also, I was quickly before to say, not now.
Well, we're 76% complete. So.
So just to set this up a little bit, Mark's going to give us an update on where he's at, working with stakeholders in particular on the drafting the rule, drafting the guidance, around the alternatives that he provided. Plus, you know, we're talking about the whole rule, not just the PHPs, and talking about the setup for the economic analysis. CEPA and Regulatory Fairness Act requirements. In the process of that, we realized that there were some, we were talking past each other on some of these alternatives, and we want to clarify what those issues might be today. So, you want to start off, Mark?
Okay, so we'll go off the handoff. I see the computer's still not cooperating. So the work on the board manual had started before the February board meeting. Staff has initiated the full set of preparation of the draft water typing system rule for presentation at the board's May 2019 meeting after the February meeting, because we waited to get the full suite of elements approved by the board for inclusion of both rule and board manual guidance, most of which came at last May's meeting or May of 2017, and then the PHP options, the three options for analysis, or I guess it's being called alternatives today. For analysis came at the February meeting. So we've now held four draft rule stakeholder meetings. We've developed draft rule up to the full clarification of the PHBs. I'll address that more in a moment. But we have incorporated those elements of the current rules and in WAC 222-16-030 and 031, which were approved by the board, definitions for off-channel habitat, and the two processes which you establish the end of fish habitat, which is either using the physicals, which is the existing physicals in the current rule, or by the new protocol, fish protocol process, or the fish habitat assessment methodology, FHAM, which requires PHBs in order to incorporate. During, so for, and that's the rule development. Board Manual Section 23 has been identified in rule as a brand new board manual section. It is to accompany a permanent water typing system rule. It is to be in two parts. The first part is how to identify the break between type F and N waters, which is what we're working on now. The second part is the break between non-fish perennial and seasonal waters, the MPNS break, that is work to be in the future. There are three primary parts that this manual has to have when it accompanies the draft rule. And the reason why we need to have this is that the rule will have requirements in it, but the board manual provides guidance in order to implement the rule. So the three parts that the manual will include when we present the full rule packet to the board for your consideration next May is how to conduct the FHAM. This framework is mostly complete. However, it does not yet include all of the guidance for the PHBs. The best management practices for electrofishing, I see I'm up. And how to delineate off-channel habitat. There have been 10 board manual stakeholder and technical folk meetings. There's been a lot of work put into the guidance. In addition to that, there have been 3 field days. Two of which to determine if the PHBs could be identified in the field, and 1 field day concentrated on how to consistently measure the gradient and bank full width. These days have resulted in a number of methods to consider that the board manual stakeholder group will consider for inclusion in the board manual.
Mark, one of the things that has come up, I know, in conversations is that we don't currently have a standard for measuring gradient. Is that going to come out of the board manual process?
Yes, it is. And I believe, as Hans and Phil Roney talked about, some of the work currently being done in the pilot may also help inform on how to, good guidance in order to measure gradient. So we're looking forward. That's a byproduct of the pilot, which we believe can help inform guidance in the board. So again, it's just kind of a refresher. When the board considers the implementation of formal rulemaking through the filing of the CR-102, it's not just draft rule that the board is looking at, but it's draft rule, associated guidance to that rule, that's the board manual, plus all the other elements that the board needs to consider in order to do formal rulemaking under the Administrative Procedures Act and the Regulatory Fairness Act. So that means that we also have to have a cost-benefit analysis, and if needed, a small business economic impact statement. That's the Regulatory Fairness Act part, as well as the environmental analysis through CEPA. So the work being done on the cost-benefit analysis, DNR has convened an economist working group. We have an established membership. We've had several meetings. Unfortunately, the scheduling has not brought all of them together for any one meeting, although we hope that in the future we can get them all together. Right now, we're planning on meeting on about a six-week schedule in order to stay current as things are being developed for the cost-benefit analysis. However, we just had a meeting and we're going to have another meeting real soon because we think we need to get some initial work done quickly. The individuals in the group include two DNR economists, David Chertuti and Christoph Larson. We also have John Ehrenreich, with economist with the WFPA. Paula Swedeen is representing Conservation Caucus. We have Kasia Petora, an economist with the Department of Ecology. And Vic Musselman with the Small Forest Landowner through WFFA. We also have invited stakeholders because not all caucuses could supply any comments. So we have Jim Peters with the Northwest Indian Fishery Commission. Joseph Pavel is an alternate if Jim cannot attend. And Karen Twilliger with WFPA is attending. For DNR, it's myself and Colleen Granberg.
And Mark?
Yes.
I forgot to ask a question. I'm going back to that you've been out in the field already, mm-hmm. trying to apply some of these PHBs. Are there more field days likely to occur in the future?
Absolutely. And really there is a question before the board today, and I'm a little ahead of myself, but there have been, as Chairman Bernath pointed out, in some ways, as we were developing the draft rule, we found that we've been talking by each other a little bit, and staff really uses direction through board motions as the blueprint from which we develop the rules and the guidance. We really need clarification from the board. It's a question that I'm going to ask at the end of my presentation. And with that clarification, plus the work with the pilot study, which you'll be informed of in November, plus as we develop things further on, we plan on having additional field review days in the early spring. That will give us a chance to look at the rule language as well as the guidance, put people in the field and actually apply the guidance that we've developed to make sure that really works. It's a process that we deployed for the CMZ board manual. And the process we developed, we went out and quite frankly, we tried to break our process and we were unable to do so we felt it was a pretty good process. I think the same logic would be applied here. When we give guidance on how to locate and measure the PHBs, we're gonna go out and test how well the guidance works because the goal is to have a rule that is implementable and repeatable. So yes, we're planning on additional field days in the spring. Consistent with the adaptive management program, there's a guidance in board manual section 22, which is the guidance on how to implement the adaptive management program. There is a charter process. The working group has developed a charter, and the group will meet to review the elements for evaluation, as you might imagine. The costs and the benefits, there can be numerous costs and benefits to evaluate, so this group's going to discuss those that are key to the analysis for this rulemaking. And then, again, I alluded to the fact that we absolutely have to do a cost-benefit analysis, but we also have to determine if there's a need for an SBEIS. This group will discuss that, and if there is, the elements for that will also be discussed. And the group is going to review drafts of the cost-benefit analysis and SBIS as they're being developed. So this group will help inform DNR. It's part of our commitment to a full stakeholder process. so that as projects are being developed, all of the stakeholders are aware of things, and rather than just quarterly reports to the board. As was reported to the board at the last meeting, the DNR economists have a large amount of work to do, and we identified a need to contract an economist. So I'm happy to state that we did put out an RFP, which closed on July 31st. We did get two responsive bidders. We are going through their bids and setting up interviews, and the contract's expected to be awarded by September 14th. And then this is keeping us on schedule, so when the economist comes on, we will have product for them to work, including product from the economist working group. So, as I've said, staff must use the board approved elements to prepare the rule and guidance. And for the water typing rule, the elements have come through a variety of sources, the May 2017 meeting, and then the PHP options approved at the February meeting. The board, during the February meeting, received the PHP recommendations, public comments, and an ensuing board discussion. And as a result, the board did approve three PHP alternatives to be analyzed for board consideration for inclusion in the water typing system rule. These are very important because PHPs will be applied as part of FHAM, and the PHPs are important for the tributaries within the anadromous floor. During got ahead of myself again. So the results of the February meeting were recorded in the February board minutes. They were reviewed and the minutes were approved by the board at the board's main meeting. It's in the minutes where we captured not only the full motion, but an accompanying table which described the PHP options that the board had discussed, what we knew at that time. With that in mind, staff is making a request today, and again, as we've developed draft rule and guidance, and there have been a number of issues that have come up, concerns that are being discussed, and decisions being made as far as the preparation of the draft rule and guidance. However, for the PHP options, concerns were expressed regarding the PHPs for tributary streams and how they will be applied within the anadromous fish floor and through the PHP options applied as part of FHAM. The primary concerns have come from the Industrial Landowner Caucus. In June, DNR staff did meet with the industrial landowners and to discuss their options, and we believe we do understand what the clarification that they're requesting for the PHPs. However, there is some confusion, so staff requests board clarification of the PHP options, specifically PHPs to be applied to tributary streams, to be evaluated for board consideration for inclusion as part of FHAM and the anadromous fish floor.
So what we've done with this agenda is I'm going to ask after lunch, probably, Ray, Jim, and Karen to come up and provide an opportunity for any clarifications on each of the alternatives. And then there'll be an opportunity for the public to comment on that discussion, and there'll be an opportunity for the board to discuss it. And if we need to tweak, meaning provide more direction to staff on what should be in the PHP alternatives, that's our opportunity to do that this afternoon. So let me ask now if anybody has questions for Mark.
I have one question. I really like the process you set up for the economic analysis, the working group, and you've got people on there. One thing I noticed was there's a no action alternative and three alternatives, and one of them is being sponsored by the Eastside Tribes, yet I don't see anyone on the working group for the economic analysis from the Eastside, or did I miss that?
Not at that moment, there is not, and I appreciate that. We can reach out.
And the other comment I was going to make was, did you consider having a similar process for actually analyzing the four alternatives to make sure that you don't need to come to the board for clarification, that you could go back to the proponents of these different alternatives, maybe have a working group to go through that process?
We believe that the PHPs that we are currently analyzing are those that's identified by the board. And this is part of our concern is that, and I spent much of yesterday going back and reviewing the board minutes, as well as all of the documents, associated documents. And there was not a large discussion about tributaries. And when it became apparent that tributaries were there's confusion around them. I'm not going to say it's an issue.
I don't want to get into the specifics, though. I think we're going to talk about it later. But my question is, you set up a working group for the economic side of this. Did you consider setting up a working group for the actual alternative language that you'll be analyzing? That's all I'm wondering.
And my answer is, we could do that once we fully understand what all of the options are. And right now, that would have been premature.
Any other questions from board members for Mark at this point in time? Okay. Given the hour, I'm going to suggest we break for lunch. We'll take a little extra time because people will be expecting public comment to occur at 1 o'clock. So my suggestion is we come back at 1 and get going again. Thank you.
Thanks.